Balcony's first ever year-round bourbon was an inspiration. It all had to work together. A blend of carefully selected ingredients, Texas-sized pot stills, and creative people determined to find the absolute best way to usher a new whiskey along. When you discover how it pairs with a meaningful moment, suddenly the feeling of drinking great whiskey becomes a whole lot more.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of Whiskey Neat, Spirited Conversations with Interesting People. I am your host, Christopher Hart. Now, real quick, let me show you how easy this is, because these glass toppers are a real bitch. Can you say bitch on the radio? Nope. No. All right, we'll flag that.
Use it as a verb.
All right. All right, I won't bitch at you. There we go. All right, so you just pop this thumb, give it a little push. Boy, I'm glad I didn't break that. And I'll be honest with you. So, yes, Waterford is a sponsor of the show, but we ended the show on this bottle of Dunmore 1.1, and it is freaking fantastic. That's kind of stupid now that I think about it. You can't say, you can't call someone the B word, but you can say the at. Yeah, that seems odd. Yeah. It's the same.
Like the butthole thing, too.
But it's the same word, though.
Yeah.
This is absolutely, God, this is fantastic. We talked about this at the end of the show. So, I'll start this week by saying, God, it's fantastic. Dominic and Todd join me again this week. The Whiskey Social is tomorrow. We are wrapping up one of the most stressful, intense, beat-down time periods of the year, building up to the Whiskey Social. It's it. Tomorrow's it. HoustonWhiskeySocial.com. Get your tickets to the event. We're looking at 1,500 to 2,000 people. It's going to be an insane night of spirits. I'm really looking forward to it. Let's pay the bills real quick. I wanted to talk about, of course, let's lead out with Waterford. So, yes, Waterford's a sponsor, but if you're familiar with the concept of terroir and wine, which is the earth and how it affects the grapes depending on where they're grown, you'll appreciate Mark Rainier's Waterford Single Malt Whiskey from Ireland. Mark is combining a Scotch whiskey and fine wine talents to produce an authentic series of Irish single malt whiskeys. Not Irish whiskey. Irish single malt whiskeys. Based on traditional wine industry principles. Look, I've talked about it a billion times. I love what they do. Every release is different. On the back of the box, there's an actual terroir code. You can go to the website. You can actually see what farm it comes from, when it was grown, when it was harvested, how long the spirits have been aged. They give you more information than you can physically put on the bottle and the box. There's so much information that they had to give you a terroir code for you to go look it up. The new thing that they've got now is the cuvée, and as well as a bunch of new additions, Gaia 2.1, Luna. I love what they're doing. Waterford is doing a great job really showcasing what Ireland is capable of. Go check it out. All right, so next up, this week's episode is brought to you in part by Sagamore Spirit Rye Whiskey. They are reviving the tradition of Maryland-style rye whiskey at their Baltimore farm and waterfront distillery. Each batch of their whiskey is hand-blended for consistency and aroma, flavor, and texture, creating a balanced flavor profile. I've talked about them every week. I love them. In fact, this week at the Whiskey Social, go to our website. We actually listed the three masterclasses being featured this year at the event. There's a great tasting covering blended, how important blending is in bourbon with barrel bourbon. There's a rye whiskey conversation, especially the history of rye with Sagamore. Sagamore's going to be there doing their event. And of course, we're doing a great Q&A with Milam and Green. It's going to be a great weekend. Buy your tickets at HoustonWhiskeySocial.com. Drink lots of water. Eat before the event. Lots of water. While you're waiting in line, drink a full bottle of water. Uber. Eat before you get there. There's going to be food there. There's going to be water there. The event's going to be great. I'm excited for it. So, all right. Without further ado, please welcome Todd Grube and Dominic Sung of Fierce Whiskers Distilling out of Austin. Cheers. What's What's up, guys? You didn't have to dress up this week. You both look great. We are this is dropping Friday, which is, I guess, for those watching today. The Whiskey Social is tomorrow. We are now less than one day away from all of my stress being relieved. Are you guys nervous at all? This is your first full year as owners. It's really coming down to the wire here in terms of all the last minute T's to be crossed and I's to be dotted.
No, not too nervous. It's just another event. Can't be worse than my wedding, so, you know.
Speaking of your wedding, a little birdie told me you royally screwed up the wife.
I did.
Your wife's podcast name last week.
I had some crow to eat. I did not adjust the name correctly. It is Motherhood in ADHD for the camera. Motherhood in ADHD, not Life in ADHD. My wife gave me some heavy ribbing for that. Of look, I've done this for like 4+ years. Like, what are you doing, getting it wrong?
Yeah, I don't know. It can't be as bad as me forgetting my 9-year wedding anniversary to like last month. Have we talked about it on the show? So I left the house on October 20th, and as I'm walking out the door, she goes, "Honey," and I turn around and she handed me a card, and it was kind of lumpy. Thought it was a pregnancy test, which doesn't make any sense. I was like making jokes about it, and I opened it and it said "Happy anniversary." And I was like, "And you
weren't you on your way to see us?"
I was on a way to see to do something that had nothing.
That's
to
hilarious.
No excuse whatsoever, but this time of year has been so bad, and you see it in like, you know, King of Queens, like all the sitcoms from the 90s of forgetting your wife's anniversary. And
yeah, it's the cliche.
It's the cliche. And so I just started laughing, and I couldn't help but laugh. I'm like, you know, like I'm a very loving, we have a great marriage. And she didn't get upset. She was a little disappointed. but our actual 15-year anniversary was yesterday, and I remember that. So, or at least I convinced her that I remember that, but it's one of those things that it's, you know, you never, it's not as bad as what you did is not nearly as bad as what I did.
Well, I was not physically present for the first 4 of our 5 wedding anniversaries. So
what do you mean?
Like I wasn't physically in the same city as her to celebrate or do anything for our anniversary. Because of work reasons, there was always this one work thing that kept getting rescheduled the exact same week every year.
And I always make fun of him for being busy businessman. Like, yeah. It always reminds me of the Family Guy episode of the busy woman, answering phones and like all kinds of stuff going on.
Well, there's one thing every once in a while I decide to post it on Facebook because a lot of my friends are industry people, but I am right now insanely behind on everything. And so, especially leading up to the socials. So I've had nothing but support and understanding and patience from all of our suppliers, all of our vendors. And I want to thank them, but it also comes off like I'm humble bragging or something, like where you're like, I'm really busy with business, yeah. Guys.
I hope right.
And that's what you've been making fun of me for a couple of years, but we're getting there this Saturday.
Which is my wedding anniversary this Saturday.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. I forgot
it's
about that.
It's also Canfield's wedding anniversary.
It is, yeah.
So your wife's cool with it, though.
Yeah.
She'll be at the
event. We'll do something Sunday.
Sure.
Yeah.
How long have you been together? Married?
This will be 6-year wedding anniversary.
Wow. How long have you and your
hopefully
wife
Hopefully I got that right, and the next episode isn't me like
apologizing. You're like doing the math real quick.
This year will be 11, so we just passed 10. So
11 married.
Yeah.
Man. I guess that deserves a drink. Yeah. A couple things. We have some bottles left over from the comedy event we did. People didn't drink them all, so I wanted to try them. I actually have not had any of these.
I like the new one. This is the newer release, the 2003, right?
2003, mm-hmm. 107 proof. And you know, we'll try it today and whatever's left. And there's quite a bit left.
This is a good bottle.
People would like. Why wouldn't people? It's not 107 proof. That's the barrel entry proof. It's only 89.5 proof.
Really?
Really?
Oh, wow. Yeah. I didn't realize that.
So anything obviously left here today will all support the social. Let's see here.
Yeah, this is a good one. I had a Poison Girl a couple times. I didn't like the 2002. I don't know if you had that one.
No.
It was super oaky, and this one's not at all.
I made one comment a couple years ago on HBS how I didn't care for one of these in Kentucky, and it did not bode well with Campari. They were not happy. Oh my god, it smells fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Smells like turkey.
Smells like turkey. It's very good.
Get a little cherry.
I can tell why it was proofed down, because it's tannic.
Mm-hmm.
It's extremely tannic.
It's very, very it's more oaky. Tannic than I recall.
Very oaky.
Yeah.
But 16 years old. Wow.
I like it, though.
And are these trading? It's going for crazy money?
It's been a while since I've seen them.
I think these are a high retail price, and I don't think that they trade for much more than that.
No.
Well, I don't think any turkey trades.
The older ones, the 2002 did for a while.
I want
to
say that.
And the 90, what was it? Wasn't there like a 98?
This is barrel proof, and it dropped down to 90 proof. Wow.
This is thick, though.
Barrel proof under 100.
Yeah, it's dark.
Yeah, I really enjoy this. I also, so I went up to visit Ricky's in Spring. We bought.
I see. Yeah, I see the
brown water taters.
Yeah. Shout out.
We bought, you know, I don't know those guys, right? Do I do know them?
No, I mean, I've talked about them because I do their art.
Can give me some names?
Andrew Wang.
Okay.
Who runs Oasis Liquor in Cyprus.
Okay.
Is one of the main people. And then Julian Fries out of California.
Oh, you know Julian. I know Julian, yeah.
We were just working on a beer label. They're doing a beer. Fight Club beer.
He's a good guy. Wait, so if they're not based here in Houston, then how...
It's a national group that happens to be... that Andrew is in Cyprus. So his store brings in the picks for the group.
So then how does Ricky's get it?
They have a partnership. So they split a lot of picks between the two, yeah.
Yeah, so Ricky's, I saw that they had a Holmes K 16-year, $150.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I often tout Gregarious as being the cheapest independent bottler, but right so far I know our 16-year is going to be about the same price.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious how it turned out. I figured we could crack it,
give
it a taste. Next, I brought some 80s Weird Dusty that there's not a lot of information
I've never seen that one.
It's
what is it, something Prince? Kentucky Prince?
Yeah, so it's Kentucky Prince from 1989. It's 101 proof, and
it's a cool bottle.
It's tremendous, and I've only seen two.
Hmm.
So that's what's left. I mean, when I bought it, there was like no way
to assume.
Yeah, Kentucky bourbon. Yeah, there was no way to guess valuation. Like, you didn't know if you were overpaying for it or what.
Yeah.
So we opened it at the comedy event. I figured we've got a little left. Let's taste it.
I mean, I'm surprised there's less of that left than there is of the 2003.
We let people pick anything they wanted.
Yeah, no, I'm intrigued. People just tell you, pretty bottle.
Yeah.
Pretty bottle.
There was, I forget who it was, but I want to jump to the phone. So the comedy event was only $35 a ticket. That's not enough to buy Glencairn's.
Yeah.
And if we were to buy Glencairn's, then it would be over $40 a ticket, closer to $45.
I saw that guy's post.
That guy was like, no Glencairn's? Oof. Like, hey, man, go fuck yourself. Like, it's hard enough selling a comedy event. And I don't think I've talked about this on air, but we've promoted and talked a lot about the Secret Group in Houston. They do pay whatever you want comedy shows. And if you go see a decent-sized name, a celebrity name you've heard of at the Improv, $20-$30 is usually what you're going to get. So to do my show for $35 with no nationally recognized names, there were some people who were like, oh, only $35? That seems a little high. I'm like, hold on. Do you realize what you're getting?
For all the whiskey.
Yeah, for all the whiskey? Drinking. Like, you're one pour of any of these would be way more than that ticket. You're getting a free comedy show. Yeah. So anyways, we didn't do Glencairn's, but the whiskey itself, like, it was awesome. Like, so there's plenty of it.
Yeah.
This turned out great. I'm happy with it. It's an oak bomb for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Especially at 16 years old.
I brought the William LaRue Weller that will be poured at the social.
The social. Oh, you pick it up from Ryan?
Yep. And then, I'm a man who knows what he likes.
Yeah.
The Tony K's, Weller pick. Course, which is well loved, and then I brought a Golden Devil, like another rum bottler, and this is the Caroni the 24-year Caroni that, or 23 or 24 years old, the one that you got a sample of, but we passed because it's, you know,
we were,
it's
yeah, Caroni. It was so expensive, we weren't sure if we were going to sell it. But I say that, but a lot of the Jamaican we brought in was super funky.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And there were other bottles that I like more, but this is good. And I was talking to Canfield about it, and he was saying it's kind of like a scotch, a peated scotch drinker's rum because of the tire fire aspect. Yeah. But this one's like super subtle. You had this one at my house, I think.
Wait, is this the one that we...
This is the one.
It's the exact one.
I think so. I mean, it was the same year. I think it was 98.
And there was only one barrel available, so it has to be
the same exact proof.
Yeah. What was the price on that?
I think it was over 200. I think it was like 220.
Yeah, see, like I think it's hard. I think it's hard for people like myself and Holmes K because there are bottles that deserve to be over $200, but I don't think it will move.
Yeah, that's a tough
even though it deserves it, right? Yeah. I mean, there are people, we've already mentioned the last show, the 27-year-old Jamaican is going for 418 in the UK and 350 in Canada.
Yeah.
And we're going to have it for like 190, which is nothing.
Yeah.
And even then, I'm a little nervous. It's not going to move.
This is K&L. It came from K&L. So it's a big store.
Yeah.
And it sold out not immediately. I feel like in a couple weeks. I don't know how big that barrel was.
Yeah. All right. So let's try it. I'm in. Let's go probably the Kentucky Prince next, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, so I bought this from Alex Coffin. Pretty well known. Shout out to Alex. Interesting.
I love the cheesy gold cap. I mean, plastic cap.
Look at it. It's the 80s. It looks like you're going to see it in the next
Tron. It's got like a gem on the front. It looks like Thundercats.
100% Thundercats.
Thank you.
I wonder if that trademark's available.
Kentucky Prince.
My ears perked up.
I mean, I feel like if they did a redo of He-Man, then I feel like Thundercats is prime for another redo.
No, he's talking about Kentucky Prince.
Oh.
Yeah. Do you know that they have...
Fine. I'm off base.
They have several... Thundercats is covered. Yeah. What a completely ridiculous...
I was like, I'm pretty sure that's taken.
Well, they complete like when faced with whether we're talking about the old bourbon that no longer exists or a show that's been released twice in the past year, there's both two He-Man series that have been released on
maybe
Netflix.
He thought you meant the Thundercats eye
or Thundercats
for your bottles
that hadn't been touched since the 80s.
No, Thundercats has been brought back.
No,
I'm almost
I saw something in the last couple of years about it. I don't remember.
Thundercats remake something. Yeah, there was a 2011 series.
2011?
Yep, and there was also a 2019 film, Thundercats Roar, Thundercats... Yeah, there's like one, two, three. There's a Thundercats 2020 series that came out. Hey, man.
All right.
You're wrong.
I am wrong.
You're wrong. Stand corrected. You can come back on next week and apologize. Kentucky Prince trademark. I want to see if
this is weird. It's good, but it's weird.
It smells like...
It's funky.
It's got the dust.
It definitely, kind of like, when you say dusty, it tastes like...
Glue?
Something funky and old.
I don't like it.
Like an old house.
I don't like that.
No, sir.
I
That's really...
Bro, this tastes like cigarettes. Medicine. In a, like in an
it's
old
the basement
car.
Of a casino.
This tastes like...
It tastes like the rugs at a casino.
It tastes like the like rugs the inside my... My dad used
whoa,
to have...
I don't need to hear any back van stories.
No, what's the name of that car that had a bra on the front?
What?
Remember in the 80s, there was a car, Le something?
Le Sabre?
LeBaron.
Yeah.
You remember a Chrysler LeBaron?
Yeah.
Look up Chrysler LeBaron. I want to see...
Everybody put them on there. It didn't come with it.
They would, for whatever reason. They would put a bra, a protective guard on the front for some stupid reason. Chrysler...
And they would always have... Their hubcaps would always fall off
in
that car.
Yeah, man. It smells like an old skating rink. Glow sticks.
Oh, that's not good.
Chrysler LeBaron. This is not good. I thought it was... It smells off. Something's wrong.
It smells okay.
Bro, I thought I had this before at the comedy show. I thought it was decent.
My first sip, it wasn't bad, and then it just started to get funky.
I don't
it's
like
got a weird finish that kills it.
It's like very
medicinal. Yeah, I'm out.
Very medicinal. Yeah.
All right, let's do this, Holmes K. I want to try this Foursquare.
Yeah.
Bourbon drinkers. I'm excited to see Holmes K here. What's up? You just rotate your microphone. Yeah. Come on, man.
Yeah, so Oasis got in a bunch of, and Ricky's got in a bunch of these Homeskay, because I picked up a Ooflet. That's the one I brought last time.
Iflet.
Iflet, there you go. I always get it wrong.
Yeah.
Iflet.
You're like Dom.
And they have a Belize.
That just means you should have a little grace for us when we say Velier.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
He can stand a little correction today.
I got to get that taste out of this glass. Yeah. That was way that was worse weird. Than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
I mean, awful. All right, so 16-year-old Barbados, brown water taters, right? Brown water
taters.
It's got to be good. $150 a bottle.
There's no such thing as bad Foursquare.
Yeah, there's underwhelming Foursquare. Yeah. There's not a lot of bad Foursquare.
Yeah, the smell in the glass is like lingering.
It's great. There's absolutely nothing to complain about. Definitely shout out to Julian and the team, Andrew Wang. That's more bourbon-y than that Kentucky Garbage Prince that we just tried.
Which now we can clearly say 16. That you overpaid for that one.
What was the Shibboleth was 16 years old, and it takes that tastes a lot oakier than this does to me.
Very happy with this. Tastes like Foursquare rum.
Yep.
Zero to complain about. I'll be interested to see how some of these Irish whiskeys. I don't know if I mentioned this earlier, but they did send me an email. I said Cuvée. And I think it's pronounced...
No, you said Cuvée.
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 Cuvée. Shout out to Bill Campbell. Waterford has been a sponsor of the show. Bill Campbell and his Glass Rev Imports have been sponsoring the show for a little over a year now. Maybe even two. Feels like a while. But they have put in front of me some of the most fun... From Amroot to Waterford. I mean, some of the most fun, like...
Oh, they have Amroot as well.
Amroot's theirs, and Amroot turned out fantastic. We did that pick together.
Yeah.
What's up?
If you want to know how to pronounce Cuvée, go back and watch the Sam Heughan episode, the first one, episode 99, because I say it at the beginning, because I did...
Oh, that's right. You did the voiceover ad for Glenfiddich.
Yeah, and I said French Cuvée, okay.
So. Oh, wow. Shout out to Glenfiddich.
What's the joke that Mike says... For Sam Heughan's name that cracks me up every time. What does he say for the last name?
I don't know, like Hugan or something?
No, it's like he completely
butchers it each time.
Yeah. I need to try to remember that. No, I've liked all the Waterford. The first time I had it was on the LA trip with Jack. You brought a bottle of that there.
They're interesting. They're barley heavy, biscuity heavy, which is fun. I like a yeasty spirit, and I don't know how old these are, but they're pretty close to what I would. Almost the unaged spirit in terms of their flavor profile. Like you can feel the wood influence, but it's more yeasty. You know what I mean? I always think of growing up, like for us in our coming from poor Pasadena, Texas, our special Sunday after church would be to go to Golden Corral. And Golden Corral always had those honey rolls, those dinner rolls, those yeasty, thin, airy rolls.
Oh, yeah.
I always think of that when I think of when I taste some of the Waterford expressions. Like
sometimes you want note. Quantity over quality, you know.
I got that note on the Gregarious Grand Guiana, that like buttered roll. I love that.
It's that airy, flaky, biscuity, fun.
It's like slight mineral, but in a good way.
100%.
Savory. So I remembered it's Sam Hadouken.
Oh, Hadouken. That's right. It's always like, what is like it? Mortal, Street Fighter?
Yeah.
Street Fighter. God, I love that. That's fun. Dude, Mike Salopek is simultaneously the funniest, one of the funniest guys I know, but also he's like a conservative. So you kind of, you know, you write off his intelligence and his credit and, you know,
jeez.
The guy's the worst.
Shots fired,
I mean, man. I love him in the same way that I love my racist grandfather, you know, like when my grandfather says something awful, I'm like, he's old.
But we just were having a political discussion on my way here with Mike. And what I love about Mike is that we
have different beliefs.
we have different beliefs, but we get along so well, and we can actually have a real discussion, and it doesn't turn into like ugliness. Like,
do you realize how often you move the goalpost in terms of? So oftentimes in our chat, there'll be a political discussion, and Todd will make a firm statement of like, "Hey, institutional racism's an issue," and then Mike will fucking barrage our chat. With like conservative this and racist that, and then And then Todd's like, yeah, you know, there's problems to both sides. And just kind of, you'll be like, there's no way I'm going to change his mind. Yeah. So I'm just going to appease the older boomer, which I don't think he's a boomer. I think he's in his...
You like don't think he's a boomer?
No, he's like 35. But you hear him talk and you're like, oh,
he's younger than me.
I know. I'm just saying, like, you hear...
I'm going to say this. Mike, I don't know you very well. I'm trying not to be biased after all this nonsense.
No, I mean, he's the worst. I mean, don't get me wrong. No matter what side you choose, Dom, based off your track record, you'll be wrong. But but Mike is... I think he's young, but when you hear him talk, you're like, oh, you're definitely from the 60s. You definitely hit your wife. 60s. Like, you can hear the domestic abuse in his voice is what I'm trying to say. So...
Man, I hope people realize that this is a joke.
Which is funny because
Mike's just getting smeared.
In that F, Marry, Kill episode,
yeah,
you said you would marry Mike because you like the family man in him.
So oh, yeah, he's a big family man.
So he's a fan of domestic abuse.
Apparently.
No, I mean, it's... Okay, look, there's... You know that whole... What's that saying that they say for conservatives? God, something, and country? You know what I'm saying? Like... It's like guns, God, and country.
I thought it was God's self in country.
Or God's service in country. There's like some sort of kitschy thing that like conservatives say to like say that they're all for the best values and stuff. That's Mike. So yes, he's a big family man. He's very very good dad. Super good dad.
I think it is service.
God's service in country. I think you're right.
It's just God and country.
Oh man, it might be God and country now that I say that.
Which I am for both of those, but hey.
Oof. Yeah, so I, again, going back to you being wrong. No, so Mike's a good guy. You know what I mean?
He is my taste bud. We always agree on what we like.
On profile?
Yeah.
I mean, he's no Adrian, but... all right, so moving on to the next one. Yeah. Oh, let's try your Caroni.
Yeah.
I'm in.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm scared because the only Caroni I've ever had is like the hazmat... giant tire fire version.
Well, and that's the thing. So when I think Canfield might have been, when I think of Caroni, I think of Michael Canfield. Mm-hmm. He's the most biggest Caroni supporter that I know.
We were talking about this last night and he loves this one. I just got him his bottle. He got one too.
Man.
It's like, you can smell it, but it's more subtle than the other Caroni I've had.
It's so whenever you do the Photoshop of this week's episode, just do like, you know, Dom wearing a dunce cap for always being wrong, and Mike in a KKK costume.
Is the smallest port, and that is strong.
Oh my God, it smells fantastic, though.
Yep, 23 years old.
Oh, it smells medicinal, like
charred.
I just think this one is balanced for Caroni, fruity, tire fire.
Holy cow.
What's the proof on this?
That is intense.
That is
iodine. Locked. And it's delicious.
It's 124.8 proof.
It tastes like a melted tire fire.
Yeah.
Like the smell of a fire. You know when you heat the rubber so hot that it finally catches and then you can't put it out? Or did you ever watch The Simpsons? Yes. Just outside of town, there's always a massive tire fire. This is exactly what this
is. Like what Sam Hadouken talks about sitting in Scotland by the fire and, you know, a nice peated scotch.
This is, intense is the right word.
Mm.
I love it. It's just because it's different. I mean, at this stage, like, we've tasted so many
things. I'm going to need to rinse this glass out.
Yeah. I mean, it's fun to have something that tastes like this.
I don't love it in the same way I don't love peat, but that's just me.
I think... You can introduce these to peat lovers and kind of get them into rums if you can open up their mind a little bit, but they have to really, really love peat.
Yeah, it is like a Band-Aid a little bit too. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I saw...
Plastic, tire-y, kind of melted.
Mm-hmm. I think we discussed movies last week.
It tastes what plastic smells like.
Yes.
You know?
Nose is good, though. More fruity.
We discussed
Dune.
Dune, a couple movies last week. I actually saw something last night that I thought I would shit on.
You looked straight at me when you said that, so I'm waiting for it.
Yeah, what's his name? Matrix guy? Keanu Reeves?
Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, so Keanu did a movie in 2018 that just showed up on Netflix that is so bad. And
he's such a great actor, though.
First of all, he's Okay, that's the joke, right? Because he's faceless. But he is this, like, neurosurgeon guy that's working on transplanting, mapping the human consciousness and putting it, you know, when someone dies, putting it into a robot. Mm-hmm. And the robot is the worst CGI you have seen in 30 years. And it goes wrong. And this is the whole gist of the story. I'm not spoiling it. It goes wrong. He's working on this project for the government. He immediately, like 5 minutes in the movie, him and his family are driving. They get into a car accident. And in the level of Final Destination of goriness, mm-hmm. which is probably the only cool part in the whole movie, is watching his wife and three kids die. Not in the sense that I want to see that happen, but that it was the most believable part of the film. Mm-hmm. But his wife and three kids get brutally killed, and then he tries to revive them through cloning and transplant. And the whole thing is just so genuinely bad that I'm now uninterested in watching them.
So how many times has Keanu turned you down to be on the show?
Like 57 times.
I knew you had to have 57 asked.
57 times. That's son of a bitch.
Given up.
He asked me how much. I'm just kidding.
But are you the guy that if the movie's really bad, you'll still watch it all the way through?
Of course. I finished it.
Yeah. No, I
can't. I've walked out of theaters.
Bad amount.
I've walked out of Hugh Grant movies. As soon as I heard his voice, I was like, you know, I just can't do 2 hours of this.
Okay. let me rephrase. This movie I finished. There are movies that we've started that just we gave up on. If it's not capturing us and we're on our phones, we're out. There is a really amazing movie that I've talked about on this show, I think maybe once before. And it's one of those 80s guys, like not Philip Seymour Hoffman or what's the guy? Not like Hugh Grant. It was like 90s. There's another one, like Kevin Bacon style guy. I forget his name.
You're trying to think of who it's not?
Yeah, that's the thing. Okay, that's
Kevin
a good point.
Bacon, Bill Paxton. Guy from
all right, hold on. It's called Predestination. Hold on, Predestination.
I still need you guys to just go and watch Infernal Affairs, 1, 2, and 3.
What was that related to again?
It's what Scorsese remade The Departed from.
Oh, right.
Oh no, I have not seen it yet, but I'll watch it.
They're fantastic.
So the fact that this movie has a 7.5 rating on IMDb and an 84% on Rotten Tomatoes truly makes me want to have a stroke. This is the worst fucking movie of all time, and it's Ethan Hawke.
Oh, yeah.
So,
Mr. 90s.
Ethan, how do early I say 2000s. This without spoiling it? But the entire film. Okay, spoiler alert. 3, 2, 1. The entire film, every single character is Ethan Hawke. Every main character. The people that he engages with, the people he talks to, the people he marries, the people he has kids with,
it's like suburban Star Wars,
Ethan Hawke.
Clone Wars.
It's like, all time copy. Yeah. It's a time cop thing with time travel and transgenderism, and he starts off, I'm ruining the whole thing.
What is the movie called?
Predestination.
Oh, Predestination.
Mm. He starts off life as a woman. She falls in love with a man in college. They have a kid together. That man is also him in the future after he transitions to a man. They have a baby together. That baby is also him in the future that he goes back to create by having sex with himself. The whole thing is the worst, most confusing film of all time. And every time I see that it shows up on top list, I'm like, it makes me angry. I hit my wife and kids every single time it shows up on a top 10 list. It's the worst movie. Oh, and I want so badly for you to watch so we can talk about how bad it is. The whole concept of the film is he's a time cop and he's hunting this like Unabomber type character, which also, spoiler alert, turns out to be himself.
Jack, can you just move the camera behind us and we'll put the movie up there?
Mystery Science Theater. Dude, watch the whole thing and we'll just shit talk the whole thing. So he doesn't know this, but he's an agent from the future going back to look for this Unabomber that travels through time.
He doesn't know it, but he knows it.
His future self knows it. Yes, correct.
But this is like, you're now being the guy who's like, this smells terrible, smell it.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. That's why I prefaced it with spoiler alert. So if you don't want to watch it, don't watch it. But the entire concept is he goes back in time undercover to look for this Unabomber guy, meets a woman, falls in love, has a baby with her, turns out he's both of those characters. The woman he has love with, has sex with, which, by the way, you'd think he would know that because it's from his past. Like, the whole thing just doesn't fucking make sense. And it's so...
I mean, let's throw genetics out the window here too, right? Like,
yeah, he becomes a male in a future in which they can... He carries both
genetics. Yeah, but there's a reason why incest is a problem.
Genetics. Yes, correct, yeah. So. He does this... when he has to make the transition in the future, they can fully make the transition to where you are perfectly viable, male or female. I forget which order it comes in. But the whole thing is just like, oh, every plot twist is that you're that character. Like, every plot twist. There's like 7 plot twists. The plot twist is, surprise, it's Ethan Hawke with a penis. Like, it's like the worst.
I know what's going to happen here because it has decent ratings. I'm going to watch it and like it. Because that's perfect me and Chris. I'm going to come back and be like, I think it was brilliant. I mean, it has good ratings, so who's right?
I would think it's fair to say, and I think Jack can speak to this, there are some movies that have great ratings.
He's like, don't drag me into this.
No, for sure, for sure.
No. He's already shaking his head. He knows what I'm going to say. There are some movies with great ratings that in the art world, in the cinema world, people laugh at. I mean, people make fun of Marvel movies and say that they're garbage and they're popcorn, they're not worth shit. And then Martin Scorsese hates those movies. Is he wrong?
Yes. Not for entertainment, for film.
Depends on what
he hates them? Because, I mean, he compared them to theme park rides, which who doesn't like theme park rides?
But that's a good point.
He just said people, they don't have cinematic value. Or
he was afraid that it was taking over the film industry.
Oh, and
that's
it is.
Where all the money is
going. It is. Yeah, I mean, objectively,
but,
it is.
But at the same time, he's able to make The Irishman, and like people watch a... three or four hour
film. And there was a lot of criticism to that too. It's a four hour goddamn film.
I love that.
I mean, the commentary that he's making is not wrong, right? Like you're saying, is for so long movies were made that.
But you
that
just the, argued the production, against
his. No. But what I'm saying is that the production, like, so he's wrong in that they're not good, but they were making movies only because they had a guaranteed audience, right? Like the initial source material has such a huge fan base that you will make money on that movie,
like Star
right?
Wars.
Like the production, yeah, the production companies for sure wanted guaranteed
but
revenue, which
is why
Christopher Nolan and all those guys were
part of it's built in, but part of it is that that's what we've been trained to like, because growing up, I was a big comic book fan. There were no Marvel movies like that. That built-in audience didn't do shit back then. But like the fact that my wife can watch The Avengers and enjoy it shows what's happened. It's become good entertainment for anybody, not just... But for sure, I agree with you. I'm not saying that there's not a built-in fan base, but it wasn't always the case, even when that fan base was it.
Yeah, because
my problem with the Marvel films, and I think they're enjoyable, especially, I mean, I think Iron Man is one of the best superhero movies. That's pre-Avengers, though, the first Avengers. I think since then, I mean, do you ever feel like I watched Captain America 2, and this is another spoiler alert, but like Samuel L. Jackson's character dies at the beginning of the film.
What?
And,
spoiler alerts.
But here's the thing.
You said it.
Even as I'm saying that, even if you haven't seen the film, you know Samuel Jackson didn't die because you know he signed on for 6 more movies, right? So there, it just never.
Wait, which
felt
movie
like
was this?
Captain America 2.
Takes away the gravity.
Oh yeah, yeah.
There's no stakes.
Yeah.
I in Infinity War.
Yeah,
when
right.
Everyone was
right.
Dead. I bet they're dead.
Yeah.
And then it turns out no, they are dead. But it's like but in that
reality,
timeline, not in
not the multiverse.
In the other, yeah. So yeah. You just there's no stakes.
Yeah, that's true.
Keep talking.
It's fan service. We get the moments that we wanted from the comic books. Like we see the things that we knew were going to happen.
I mean, I think you never had the fan base tapped into before because that was always like those of us who were big comic fans were often ridiculed for being big comic fans, right? And then, but once I think
geek is chic.
Yeah,
it has been for a while.
Geek is chic.
Once you realize how deep those characters had been fleshed out over decades and decades of exploring things, right? Like it was easy to tap into.
And all the things that they explore too, you know, racism and I mean like strong female characters, like it's all been there the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just sent an email to Ryan George. You ever watch those pitch meetings? The guy is incredible at it. He basically watches a movie and then does a satirical pitch meeting to the studio of the film.
That basically like oversimplifies it and makes fun of how
oversimplifies it, rips it apart, all the plot twists. Yeah. And I looked it up. There's not a pitch meeting for Predestination, but if he did one, it would be freaking brilliant. Mm. So I'm committed to making this happen. I think it would be so good.
What are we drinking next?
So, yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah.
Okay, so pull the next two things. I brought Charbet, which is
whiskey Charbet made sounds from like beer. Your stage name.
Yeah. Welcome to the stage. And I also brought not to be released New Mick whiskey from the distillery I'm an investor in. For you guys to try, 10-month-old distillate.
10 months old?
That is being used in cocktails at the distillery now in the tasting room, but not releasing as this, obviously. So,
wait, what are you...
this is so weird.
Oh, my God.
It's crazy, but I love it.
What are you... What's proprietary for Fierce Whiskers?
Well, only in that we're not going to release this, right? Like, this isn't drinkable as itself. It's only going to be mixed in cocktails, so...
No, what I mean is, like, do you guys discuss yeast? Do you guys discuss barrel char, where you get your barrels from?
Yeah, I mean, we do... you know, it's going to be a little bit different. I mean, we're weeded.
This is so weird.
Yeah, no, it's weird, but I love it.
The face, that you made is great. Because I tasted it. It tastes like it's like green pepper juice from a frying pan. That's what it tastes like to me.
I mean, the aftertaste, because it's made from beer, it is literally, the aftertaste is like crazy drinking in like a super hoppy IPA.
Yeah, so for those who don't know, Charbet is famous for their hopped whiskey. So here's the thing.
That's what I was getting. The vegetal side is the hops. Yeah,
super hoppy.
So in most distillations, for those who don't know, the only difference between beer, in the sense that, you know, beer that you drink, and whiskey, is that it's usually distilled beer but without the hops. Distiller's beer is referred to as Groot, as in I am Groot. I am Groot. Sorry, I'm looking at the TV, not the camera. Distiller's beer is usually without hops. Charbet, I guess, leaves the hops in. I don't know how they're flavoring it, but what you're getting is
it's hops.
It's crazy. It's hops.
It's hops. Yeah,
I mean, super hoppy. As someone else said, it's like drinking weed.
Yeah, kind of. I always like,
you don't like
hoppy
it?
Things.
I love it.
Smell like cat pee to me. It's like very. Yeah.
To answer your question respectfully.
Fair enough, no.
Doesn't Joseph love this stuff too?
He does.
I've had some good Charbet. I do not care for this.
All right.
Weird. It's very weird. Very earthy, very piney. Pine needles, green, vegetal. Yeah, I'm not a fan.
So I'm going to go back and answer your question. So, I mean, we have our own Rick House. We're trying different things. We're seeing how it goes.
Physically trying to fix my face.
Fine.
I'm not trying to make the face. I'm forcibly trying to fix my face. Oh my God.
You know, the bourbon will be 70-20-10.
70-20-10? Let me ask you, so one of the most common, why that mash?
Sorry, I forget, 20 wheat.
Yeah. If you're playing around with stuff and see what works. And then
it smells weedy.
Aged in oak barrels for 5 minutes.
Yeah, it's basically so we can get away with putting whatever else in there, right? Because you can be longer than that. But it's also, that's not for sale. So
Yeah. 100 proof. Yeah, 70, 20, the 20's wheat.
Oh, I haven't had it at 100. I've only had
20 barrel strength. 20 is soft red wheat, and then the 10 is malted barley.
It smells like wheat.
Let me tell
you something. Malted barley.
This is way more mellow than it was last time.
Let me tell you something. Charbet is a very, very well-known, loved by many brand. This is better than that. Just off the nose alone.
Oh, for sure. I like it. It tastes very weeded.
Mm-hmm.
That's
what I'm excited about.
This is like...
It's different.
I liked what I had before, but it was harsh and young. I mean, it was...
Sure.
It was high
4 months, I think, at that point.
This is good.
When you asked about the... So we're playing around with different char levels, so anywhere from 2 to 4 char, and then also different levels of toasting, and so we'll mess around with it and see what we like.
What's this one?
2?
I don't know.
It's light.
That particular barrel.
Hey, how old did you say it was?
That one's 10 months.
10 months old? I have to pee so bad.
But in theory, 23, 24, we'll maybe probably 24, but we'll see what it tastes like as it goes. You know, right now it's just being mixed into
that's about
cocktails.
Right. So what, like, when it's like 4 years old?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
That's probably...
You have rye too?
There'll be a rye.
The rye is going to turn out great. I'm already excited. Real quick, Jack, can you mark this? I have to pee. All right, so we've got one bottle left.
Yeah.
OWA.
The Tony K's.
Let's do it. Yeah. I'm excited to see things get back to normal because we've had, you know, like all of our allocations haven't come out yet this year. Yeah. I don't know of anyone that's released a Weller Foolproof this year, let alone an OWA. Name a Houston account that's released any of those things this year.
Foolproof this year? I think Specs released one. Not a pick.
So I think you're wrong.
Going back to being wrong. Are you talking about picks?
Yes, we're talking about single barrel picks. Yeah, I don't think anyone's done any of this. Do you know why? And I know it pissed off a lot of people. Because during COVID, all those allocations are given to their best accounts. Well, their best accounts are usually bars. So if bars have been closed, they haven't been getting them. And they're butthurt about it. So
Bars are.
Yeah, a lot of bars are very upset that they're not getting Weller Foolproof, OWA. Liquor stores did really great during the pandemic.
Yeah. So this is the one that everyone really likes in Houston. Yeah. Not everybody, but a lot of people like this one.
Well, I don't think there's much to complain about when it comes to OWA.
Yeah, OWA picks are solid across the board.
Cherry.
So Fierce Whiskers, you guys have been up and running for how long now?
Oh, man. I mean, distilling for 10-plus months, but it's been years and years in process just because of the permitting in Austin, because we're in the city of Austin. That's been a nightmare.
So. A complete nightmare. The
facility's beautiful, too.
Yeah, the facility's awesome. We built our own Rick House.
So how does it work? Can you walk through the entire place, just be like, I'm Dominic?
I mean...
Do you have to get permission?
I need to find somebody there who has, like, the electronic keys to open the doors and let me in, but, yeah, usually I can walk up and have the conversation and... I usually text my partners ahead of time, and they'll make sure somebody's there.
Yeah.
The distilling part is not huge, right? But and the Rick House usually needs somebody walking with you. But you can walk in, and
it's one of the most gorgeous facilities in Texas that I've seen.
Yeah, it really is.
Beautiful spot. Backs up to some state parkland, so it's really pretty on the backside on the patios, and the garage doors open up inside, outside.
And that's the idea, right? I mean, I'll talk to you initially. It's a premium experience. It's supposed to be high-end.
Destination to go and hang out and do all that. And hopefully, I mean, look, the focus is obviously trying to make good whiskey, but have the place be a destination. You know, what we're going to try to do over the winter and into the spring is... match up with some high-end chefs and do some live fire cooking pairings with some cocktails and stuff like that. Limited seatings, pop-ups with some big-name people. So,
big-name people like who? Randy
Spetlick. No. Like big-name chefs or like barbecue folks. You can just ask me right
now. What's up, buddy? I can be there. What's the date?
Come on. You want to cook?
No,
I mean, some conversations with people like Jesse Griffiths from Dai Due. I think... Patrick Feegis from Feegis Barbecue. We're looking for dates in the spring. So, you know, folks that have made the top 50 Texas Monthly and that kind of stuff do some different things. And
So one of the things that you guys did over at Fierce Whiskers was bring out samples of distillate and matrit as it's come to age. What changes have you made based on that feedback? And can we get a follow-up on that in case you have to go look for it?
I don't know that there's huge changes that we made because we have a bunch of different things aging and we're tasting. I think it will affect how we blend.
Yeah. And what become the core products?
That's right. What become the core products? What proof we end up at for which lines of products? I think all that is still TBD. You know, for us, it's you know, the phrase that we're using is greatness through stubbornness, right? And so...
Oh, man. Todd's really good at that one.
So what we're trying to do is put a bunch of stuff in the Rick House and then figure out what tastes good. And then in theory, we have the scientific data to know what created what. And then we'll adjust and blend and do what we need to do to create what we think
who
tastes good.
Who decides what's good?
You all?
Or people off the street?
How do I get on this panel? Like I got some things I want to say.
Yeah.
Just don't invite us. Mike or Adrian.
Yeah.
Mike, for obvious, you know, you don't want to get canceled.
Mike has a great palate.
Mike's got a great palate. It's everything else is the problem. Right. Adrian's the opposite. He's very lovable, but the guy's, his mouth is made of, you know, horseshoes.
What was the movie he was in, though?
He was in a movie?
Hot Tub.
Time Machine? Yeah.
He was in that.
You never saw Hot Tub Time Machine?
I have.
Yeah.
He was in there?
He was also in Sex Drive.
One of the main characters.
Yep. He was in The Office for a couple seasons too.
Yeah, maybe Jack can pull up a picture.
Yeah. So, oh, you fat blob of a man. Yeah, that's him.
Oh, boy.
How did you know? What did you type in? Adrian Pringle? I've done this before. Yeah. You just typed in Adrian Pringle with long hair. Can you throw in post? Can you throw up a picture of Adrian real quick? Appreciate that. Right here. Right?
Oh,
this is
Lord.
Adrian's four chins. So one thing that the reason why I ask is because what I've noticed and what I've discussed quite heavily on the show is everyone chose a pot still, which I think leaves too many congeners behind, including ourselves over at Gulf Coast. So what we've started doing is heavily charcoal filtering before it goes in the barrel to kind of strip the spirit of some of those oils and congeners. I'd be interested to see, you guys have a perfect setup, the most professional, established, gorgeous rick house I've ever seen in the state of Texas. I'd love to see some of your matrit make it through charcoal filter, a little polished.
Chris likes to call it the Harris County process.
The Harris County process, yeah.
We'll see what happens. I mean, you know.
That was Julian's idea.
I know.
Shout out to Julian at Gulf Coast Distillers, our head distiller. Julian is a great guy with a lot of bad naming ideas. Like, he's very smart, very knowledgeable. And he's like, let's charcoal filter. We're going to call it the Lincoln County or the Harris County process. And all I could think of is our dirty, dirty Galveston water. And I was like, no, let's not do that. And he's like, why? It sounds good.
I actually like it. Even if it was a joke and you hated it and eventually it caught on and that's what people called it. Because, you know, it gets to the point of Texas whiskey. Something needs to be done differently. Can't be done like Kentucky. We know that. So I like the idea of trying something different.
But I think it can be done like Kentucky. But no one has. That's the thing.
Because
like,
they're doing pot stills.
Everyone in Texas except Still Austin has done a pot still.
And who's been very popular with bourbon.
I mean, still, I have a pot column blend, but hey. You
know. Still Austin has become extremely popular using their column stills.
I have.
I think that if you were to really and truly try to mimic Kentucky the way that MGP has. Oh, but Chris, what about the Kentucky limestone shelf? Texas has one of those. We have a lot. And here's the thing. The limestone filtration, for those at home, just removes, it's a filter. We remove these things from the water. Well, so does reverse osmosis. We can do that here. We can filter things. You know what else filters things other than Kentucky limestone?
Carbon.
Filters. Yeah. We can filter that here. We can filter the product here, put a clean spirit in the barrel. Column still. I mean, I'm not supposed to say I got a cease and desist from a certain Kentucky distillery with a red wax thing. But here in Houston, we've got some massive 42-inch, 42-foot-tall column stills about to get up and running. I encourage more distilleries in Texas to do the column still.
Oh, that thing
route.
Hasn't run yet?
It's not up and running yet. Wow.
It's huge. I mean, it's more than a story high. I mean, I feel like it goes
42 feet would crazy. Be about, I don't know.
Four stories.
Yeah.
I mean, like when you're in the, I guess when I'm saying story, like whatever the high ceiling is in the distillery area, it just goes well above it.
Yeah. And there's two of them.
Yeah.
So, look, I'm extremely excited to see what comes out of Texas. I'm very excited to see what comes out of Fierce Whiskers. I'd love to see more. And here's the thing about column stills. I think it's fair to say that most distilleries in Texas, you do rounds of investing. You know, you're not necessarily flush with cash, but you're it's a startup, right? That's the whole idea of a startup. Column stills are like 1,000 times more efficient. You can utilize all of it. There's no cuts taken. You can literally use every liquid that goes through the plates. You can use it all and put it in a bottle or a barrel.
And for the concerns that it's less flavor, because, you know, that's what people say is the pot still.
That's what bourbon is.
Right, well.
Bourbon's less flavor.
Yeah. But the Texas heat takes care of that. You're getting so much oak influence in the barrel. Like, you don't need a pot still necessarily for intense flavor.
I love bourbon. I've always said it's a very narrow category, in part because we can only use barrels once.
Yep.
The charring process is pretty much the same. A lot of distillers use the same mash bill. Scotch, of course, you can throw peat in the mix. You can use virgin oak, ex-bourbon, ex-rum, literally everything, right? But bourbon's very narrow, and the most successful bourbons are, like, what's the bourbon right now that people are talking about that's not Kentucky? First of all.
Not Kentucky.
What distillation in Kentucky, name the top five. They're all Column Still. Now name the number one outside of Kentucky distillery.
MGP.
MGP. All Column Still.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you're talking about people who are pushing for efficiency because they just need to – their model is to pump out as much product as possible.
Correct.
That but doesn't it's necessarily also, mean better tasting.
In this so, case, it does.
It's pretty popular.
It is popular.
In this case, sure. It does. That's
but,
what I'm saying.
But is their popularity was made before, right? And they're just trying to pump out as much product as possible to meet the demand.
But they let's get that sentence out. I'll try again. Even in the heyday of bourbon, the most successful bourbons, when no one was drinking it, were Column Still.
I mean, arguably now is the heyday of bourbon, not before.
Well, right? It depends, but, right? So it depends on what you're referring to. Dusty bourbon, Column Still. The vast majority of it, Column Still. Even then. What's currently being made, all the most popular names, all Column Still.
Agree.
And they're popular not because the names are well known and they're super efficient. They're popular because it's delicious Kentucky and straight bourbon. I think it's the difference in – this is the one area that's really fascinating because in almost every other walk of life, the nerds make the better product. Craft beer makes the better product. Movies, some of the most greatest movies I've ever seen, independent films. I just watched the other day. I was confused, and this is a...
But it's about pleasing the enthusiasts is what, when you say better.
Correct.
You're pleasing the enthusiasts. You're not pleasing the masses, which just want a watered-down product.
But in bourbon, you are doing both.
Mm.
That's the thing. Is like in every other instance, it's two separate categories. Like some of the greatest movies at the time that you didn't realize were going to be arguably the best movies ever made, Wes Anderson films. When they first came out, they weren't big blockbusters making $1 billion, and they still aren't. But you go and you watch it, and you walk out, and you say, this is art. Wes Anderson films are a sight. Coen Brother films are a sight to behold. And they go down as being classic while not being massively appealing to everybody. However, the opposite is true in bourbon, where the nerds, their favorite bourbons are the big guys, and the big guys are appealing to everybody. Whereas when they go into making whiskey, the nerds fuck it up. And I mean that with as much love as possible, but that is what's happening. Is craft whiskey is not held in the same regard as craft beer. Craft beer is arguably better than, say, your...
And I'm sure we agree on this, that there are distilleries that we're probably thinking of that do really experimental, fun stuff that the big distilleries won't do, like throwing their stuff into every kind of cask possible, and it's so fun.
Agreed.
And again, pleases us, but it's not something that's going to sell to everyone. Everyone doesn't get it.
I agreed completely. There are, the most highly tradable bourbon right now that's from Kentucky would be Four Roses Picks, Column Still. Why, if I were to have enough money to start a distillery in Texas, and let me be clear, I'm not trying to beat up anybody. I'm in love with what Iron Root's doing. I'm in love with what some of the Texas, Andalusia's making incredible stuff. My Lemon Green's making incredible stuff. I am very happy with these things. I'm remarking on the weird thing that I think no one else has paid attention to.
I would say this, right? Like, if you have a Column Still and it optimally can pump out X, right? But you're not going to be able to sell X at its optimal output, then you've overspent.
Disagree.
Right? From a capital perspective.
Disagree. It's a great on paper argument. What you're saying is a great on paper argument. However, Texas distilleries right now, and I mentioned this before on the show, there's a Texas distillery right now that sells more private barrels in the single barrel program for more money.
I'm just going to help
roses.
Myself.
Yep, go ahead and help yourself. If you can make equivalent of what Kentucky was producing in flavor profile and quality, okay, if you give it a...
I thought I was for sure going to, just pop it. Yeah. I was going to knock your microphone off.
Then you would sell X.
Maybe. TBD. But I mean, if you're talking about initial investment capital and fundraising and all that kind
of stuff,
like
it's also hard to do. It's also more efficient and you don't have to distill as much, right? So if you're using, like for instance, if we've got a 4,000 gallon pot still, we can only keep about 10 to 15% of that to put in the barrel, each distillation run. So in a column still, we can use it all. We could be distilling once a week versus twice a week.
Yeah, but I mean, this is the thing. I've debated this a lot with a lot of people, right? Like, so if you distill once a week,
did you end up being right or did you end up being wrong?
No. It's you can see both sides, right? But if you need to employ people, right? If we want to run this like a business, and you're employing X amount of people, you need to employ them constantly. You can't just say, I need you to show up every other week to run the distillation.
So instead of hiring 10 people, you hire 5 people because you're more efficient.
I mean, it depends. It depends on how you run your business, right? So it just depends on how you're set up and how that works, right? Because if you need extra people to come and run this distillation once every 2 weeks, like you can't steadily employ them because there's not other things to do.
There are definitely other things for them to do.
It depends on how you run your business, right? Again, so it depends on how you're set up, and it depends on those, to me, a lot of those decisions have to be business decisions, not necessarily...
Iron Root is arguably one of the top and this is... But personally,
to my point, it's arguable, right? All of these things are arguable.
But I don't think it is.
You just said arguably.
No. I said arguably. See, this is why you're wrong so often. That arguably refers specifically to them being the top distillery in Texas.
See, I would agree with you more, but we'd both be wrong.
Correct, because as soon as you agree with me, that means I'd have to be wrong. So Iron Root is, and I know we're running out of time, I'll make this fast. Iron Root is really great at what they do. It's been a complete family operation from day one. They have built an absolute empire. They're fucking crushing it. I love what Iron Root's doing. They, for a long time, had part-timers. Like any business, you scale as you need.
You sure?
You cannot make a logical argument that we need to be less efficient and hire more people because. And that's exactly what you're doing.
No, what I'm saying is you don't want, in my mind as a business person, you don't want idle equipment. Like, that's wasted money, right? If you spent more capital for something that's going to sit idle for times in between.
If you focus on the end product, the deliciousness of your liquid, the demand will come. It will not be idle. But at first, and me and Todd had this great business meeting a couple weeks ago. There's a venture capitalist firm that's coming up that wants to basically temporarily, like a pawn shop, they want to buy barrels that are recently filled, give you the capital back to do other things, and then once it comes to age, you can buy it back. Essentially a pawn shop for barrels, which is a great idea because everyone needs capital. All I'm trying to advocate for here is a more efficient process and scale as you need. You know that any starting a distillery, we're going to need at least 5 people. The smallest Texas distillery, you're going to need at least 5 people.
Sure.
Focus on efficiency, focus on the end product. The demand will come.
100%.
Let me just tell you what I think. I think, first of all, Irish whiskey is underrated. And agreed. I really like this. Yeah. And it's, I just picked up agreed. A Redbreast 26.
All right, give me some Waterford.
Wait, did you get that one in already?
It's supposed to be in tomorrow.
Yeah. All
right.
We picked up a Redbreast pick, Chris, a single barrel.
26-year pick.
Who did a Redbreast pick?
A bar in Ireland.
It's some famous bar.
Of course,
it's
a bar.
Temple.
In
it's a bar in Dublin. Yeah, Temple Bar?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God.
I can't wait to get it. And it's a sherry. No, I'm sorry. It's a...
I don't remember which one.
It's sherry, because normal Redbreast 27 is port.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Ruby port.
That's I really like this. This Dunmore Edition 1.1 from Waterford. They... biscuity, delicious, 100 proof.
I really like
this.
Honestly,
this is fantastic. I could drink this all day.
Yep.
But we shouldn't hype up Irish whiskey because then it'll be, you know, more expensive for us to pick up.
I don't think you.
I was going to say Irish whiskey is underrated, but maybe here in the United States it is.
In the U.S.
Yeah. Other than Jameson and, you know, stuff like that.
I don't want to throw shade at Ireland, but I'll say this. The vast majority of their product isn't correct. Too low a proof. To whatever. Bushmills does some
kinda
great
light.
And he says Bushmills does great. Wrong a lot.
Like, they use a lot of second, like, you know, used casks.
Bushmills does great. Waterford does great. Waterford has done a lot of great things for a young brand. And that's, I'm not just saying that because they're a sponsor. I genuinely like this bottle.
I need a sample.
Connemara can be fun, but Redbreast, I think, kills it for me.
Yeah.
Redbreast, you can't go wrong.
The 27 is one of the best bottles of anything that I've had. It's just, it's amazing. But it's like
$300, right?
No.
No.
$500.
We got them the case price at like 420, $425.
I'm not paying more than $100 for Canadian whiskey. I'm not paying $500.
Have you had it?
For Ireland. I don't know, man. Have you had it? No, Chris.
Have you had it?
Chris, you know, like, you know what bourbon prices are like, right? Where we easily spend $400 on something that came out this year that, like,
not me, Tater.
Well, I don't anymore.
Dusty's, whatever.
This is one of the few bottles that, as soon as I tasted, I thought, if someone had said to me this was $1,000, I would consider buying it. If it was, that was the, you
maybe
know,
not $1,000, but
it's still one of the best things I've ever had. So I've paid.
It's unbelievably unique and really, really good.
I need to get you a sample.
I would love to taste it. I will change my mind accordingly. We're running out of time. Yep. I know we got to go. I just want to say, thank you everyone for watching. We got a lot of great feedback on last week's episode. The Whiskey Social is tomorrow. Yeah. HoustonWhiskeySocial.com. Go to Eventbrite. Go to Facebook. We're going to be pouring. We have an insane lineup. And here's the thing. We normally release the pour list. I'll say this. There's some bottles we can't release on the pour list. But I promise you, year over year, we have explosive growth of awesome bottles to provide to you that I think you guys would be very happy with. HoustonWhiskeySocial.com, Eventbrite, get your tickets. It's my – God damn it. Can you guys hear this on camera?
No.
My brain cameras are going nuts. HoustonWhiskeySocial.com.
He's getting robbed right now.
So last but not least, thank you guys for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. Thank you, Todd, for being here and looking so great. Thank you, Dom, for offering a great offering from Fierce Wickers.
And to your wife's website.
Yeah. Hold on.
Motherhood and ADHD. I'm not going to mess with this time. Anyway, go ahead.
Thank you for bringing Fierce Whiskers. I'm very excited.
Appreciate it.
I hate the name. I love the juice.
That's all that matters.
And thank you for coming on the show so that the world can see how wrong you are. Thanks, guys. Cheers.
Balcony's first ever year-round bourbon was an inspiration. It all had to work together. A blend of carefully selected ingredients, Texas-sized pot stills, and creative people determined to find the absolute best way to usher a new whiskey along. When you discover how it pairs with a meaningful moment, suddenly the feeling of drinking great whiskey becomes a whole lot more.